In a little tent, oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Cohen, who's a U.S. columnist for The Guardian and author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. He's a fellow of the Century Foundation and previously served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the U.S. representative to the United Nations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Cohen.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And what was your impression of the today's inauguration, the second inauguration of President Obama? Our previous guest was suggesting that this is a man that seems very comfortable in the presidency, and the American people are, by and large, quite comfortable with their first black president.
Yeah, I was very impressed, surprised, I should say, by the speech and impressed by it. I wasn't expecting much. Inaugurals usually are not—they're disappointing or underwhelming, I should say. This one was not. This one was different, I think, in the sense that Obama didn't just sort of go for the platitudes and the banalities of national unity, but he really did sort of pitch a pretty progressive agenda, much more progressive than I think we've seen from him in the past, and more than I was expecting. And I think what he was sort of trying to do is sort of lay out this idea that. You know, there is national unity around the things that he thinks are important, around gay rights, around protecting social insurance programs, around climate change. So it was a way of sort of creating consensus around his agenda while also marginalizing Republicans. All in all, I thought it was a very effective speech.
And in the crafting of the speech, it seemed like he was sort of using the Constitution in a way as a kind of framework. He kept, the refrain was, we the people, we the people.
Absolutely. And this is something he's done a lot. You know, he's always very effective at, and I think a lot of political speeches are effective in the U.S. if they are able to sort of orient themselves around the founding documents of the country. And if you think about the person who's being honored today with a national holiday, Martin Luther King, he, of course, did that in his I Have a Dream speech, in which he tried to cast the civil rights movement as a very sort of American movement and one that was directly descendant to the ideals in the Declaration of Independence. And I think that's a little bit what Obama did today. I mean, I think he really tried to pitch this notion that his sort of idea that, you know, collective action to solve great national challenges is very much grounded in our legacy and our history as a country. And that is, you know, I don't think it's a very radical concept. I think for American politics it's a little bit radical, I suppose. I think for Obama to say it, it's somewhat radical, because this is a guy who's been, you know, traditionally somewhat risk-averse, somewhat pragmatic, and today was somebody much bolder and much more progressive than we've seen before.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Cohen, who's a U.S. columnist for The Guardian and the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. He was served in the United States Department of State as a chief speechwriter for the U.S. representative to the United Nations. And in terms of the speech, part of the speech that got my attention, Michael Cohen, because yesterday I had the environmentalist and biologist on, Paul Ehrlich, talking about how global warming is baking Australia, and it's absolutely disastrous. He gave a very, very powerful and somewhat alarming prescription for what's happening to the world, and he's in the, and of course most of the scientists, 99% of them agree with this. The science is there. This is you know, Australia is baking. The northeast is coast of the United States is flooding. It's quite manifest, and this could be the greatest challenge to facing the planet. And it does require a kind of Manhattan Project type invocation from a leader, or you know, in Jack Kennedy's case, putting a man on the moon. And No, I'm not suggesting that President Obama reached that level, but at least he didn't talk about it in the campaign trail, but he did say, and just quoting again the way the speech was framed, "We the people still believe that our obligations as Americans are not just to ourselves, but to all posterity. We will respond to the threat of climate change, knowing that the failure to do so would betray our children and future generations. Some may still deny the overwhelming judgment of science, but none can avoid the devastating impact of raging fires and crippling drought and more powerful storms." So what was your sense of, is he laying down a marker there, or is that just rhetoric?
I mean, on a lot of these issues, I think it was more than rhetoric. I'm not convinced on climate change that it is, because, you know, he said a few weeks ago that this was an issue that there wasn't a lot of consensus in Congress to move forward on. There are things that he can do, you know, from the executive branch, but, you know, to get real movement on this issue, you need help from Congress. And I'm not sure I see where it's coming from. I also am not sure with the president, you know, having to deal with two major fiscal challenges in the next 2 months, trying to move immigration reform forward, trying to do something on gun control. To do climate change also is a lot. I just don't know if there's going to be enough impetus to do it. And I agree with you. I mean, this to me is the number one challenge for Obama, for this country to deal with. And I'm glad he said it, but until I see a real proposal out there to move forward, I'm going to be suspicious that there's going to be a lot of action behind it.
Well, he was saying that, you know, that he said the path towards sustainable energy sources will be long and sometimes difficult, but Americans cannot resist this transition. We must lead it. Now, the challenge of global warming, you know, without being alarmist, is the greatest challenge facing mankind since, say, the nuclear holocaust was. And by the way, for 30 years, we live within 30 minutes of being wiped off the planet around the clock, and we don't anymore. So great changes are capable. But in this case, it's so easily identifiable, and with the constituency of denial out there, you would think a leader and the leader of the world, this is something that he's got to step up in with whether or not the Congress is going to do anything about it or not. This is a question about leadership.
I agree to an extent. I mean, I do agree with you that the president has to push this issue forward. You know, but having said that, at the same time, one thing about Obama that's been pretty clear is that he's a pragmatic guy. He'll choose his battles. And, you know, it's interesting he's moving forward to gun control, even though I think it's very hard to get a bill passed. I think it's very, very hard when you've got basically the entire Republican Party denying the science of global warming to move a bill, and a lot of, frankly, Democrats who are hesitant to push forward with the bill. I mean, I agree with you on the need for leadership. I agree with you that this is, as I said, I mean, you said before you don't want to be alarmist. No, you should be alarmist, because this is a really serious crisis. I'm just questioning whether how aggressive he's going to be on this, because I don't know if there is that group in Congress is going to be supportive of a bill. But, you know, I think you're right, though. That is much of a defense. I mean, this is such an important issue. He has to talk about it more and certainly do more than he just did today. And today was a good start. And I like the fact that he actually called out the climate denialists out there. That was a good thing to see him do. But he needs to go further on this. And we'll see if it happens. But one thing I will say is that he can do something on the executive level. He can do something with his executive powers, you know, from a regulatory standpoint. And that'll be curious to see if he move forward on that in the near term, even if he can't get a bill through Congress.
So the other thing, Michael Cohen, the other aspect of the speech that I found pretty interesting, and I think he's bringing this is not an enunciated policy, and of course you've written speeches for the UN, the U.S. representative to the United Nations, so you know a lot about U.S. Policy and how it's enunciated. But he did say, and again quoting from his speech today, "But we are also heirs to those who won the peace, and not just the war, who turn sworn enemies into the surest of friends. And we must carry those lessons into this time as well. We will show the courage to try and resolve our differences with other nations peacefully, not because we are naive about the dangers we face, but because engagement can more durably lift suspicion and fear." So I would say that might have been a signal to Iran. What was your response?
That was how I took that as well. You know, that's not a new thing for Obama to say. I mean, he said that on the campaign trail in 2007, 2008. He certainly said it before. You know, in a way, it sets a nice tone for a second-term foreign policy, to talk about the need to for diplomacy and for negotiation and to turn sort of our back on this perpetual war that we've sort of experienced the last 10 years. You know, look, I've always thought this president has no interest whatsoever in going to war against Iran, and that everything he's done over the past 4 years has been to try to prevent a war from happening. I still think that's true. I still think, you know, that's his goal. So today I don't see it changing much, but it's good for, you know, I think it's good for him to remind people about where his sort of mindset is. But again, I look at this president as somebody, I look from who he picked for Secretary of State and Secretary of Defense, you know, as somebody who is taking a long, hard look at U.S. overseas commitments and the sort of fetishization, if you will, of our military. And he's taking a step back from that. I think it's a good thing and long overdue.
Well, the fact that he's chosen people that have actually fought in the Vietnam War and who have come to recognize the folly of that war, as opposed to the reckless, you know, utopian militarism of the neoconservatives. And, of course, George W. didn't serve in Vietnam. But it seems like so many of our presidents who have not served in the military get, you know, overwhelmed by the military and get seduced in the way that some of our journalists get seduced when yeah. they're embedded with the military. And, you know, people like Bill Clinton, who never served and was very defensive about that fact, and a whole slew of them, Ronald Reagan, of course, being famous, having only been served in the movies, but not in World
right.
War II. So the fact that he's got these Chuck Hagel and John Kerry there in these important roles indicates to me that maybe there's going to be a change. What's your sense?
Well, look, I think, you know, I think the point you make is a great one about presidents being seduced by the military, especially ones who never served. I think any seduction that existed between the military and Obama ended around 2010, 2009, after the Afghan review in the fall of 2009, in which Obama definitely felt as if he was being boxed in by the military, which he was. And, you know, if you look at what his sort of response out over the past couple of years, it's definitely been to sort of take military advice and take military, you know, advocacy with a grain of salt. In a way, I think that's his mindset for a while. I mean, he rejected their advice on Afghanistan. And I think, you know, he'll probably reject it even further as we go forward with the drawdown from there. And I think I would, you know, view that as well as the selection to be like Hagel and Kerry, who seem very suspicious of foreign entanglements, as a sign that Obama's going to do what he wants in foreign policy. He's not going to be guided by the military. That, by the way, you know, it's a great point. This is a really big shift, I would say. You know, a president who definitely sort of holds the military at an arm's length a little bit, especially someone who never served, especially when he's a Democrat. But that's my sense of Obama at this point, that he is very much going to, you know, fashion his own course on foreign policy, you know, whatever the uniform military says. And it's their own fault, frankly, because I think they burned him on Afghanistan. I think he feels burned. I think he feels like he needs to take his own counsel on these issues.
Well, I think specifically, though, Michael Cohen, I don't know that it was the entire American military that burned him so much as Petraeus. I mean,
I'm sorry, the senior officer corps. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because I think so much of the American military, the top brass and the enlisted men, all the way down the enlisted men, did not like Iraq and did not like Afghanistan. They thought they were disastrous. I mean, I think if you did a real poll, you'd find, you know, but for the Tommy Franks of this world, most of them thought it was a bad idea.
But if you look back at, say, what happened in Afghanistan, again, I'm looking back, and this is 3 years now, but the Afghan surge review, this was in fall of 2009, he was getting a lot of pressure from the military, you know, from Petraeus and McChrystal, from others, to push forward from Mike Mullen, to push forward with the surge. And I think there was a sense in the White House they were being boxed in. And so I think, you know, again, I don't want to speak for all more than a million members of the military. I think it's more a question that Obama is more reluctant to, or more hesitant to take the advice of, you know, his military aides as he might have been 3-4 years ago. That 3-4 years ago, he might have been intimidated by them and felt that he, you know, only had so much wiggle room to operate vis-a-vis the military, and I think maybe now he feels he has a little more a little more options at his disposal, and a little more confidence, frankly, a little more confidence in his own decision making and his own ability to manage U.S. foreign policy.
Well, indeed, his first national security advisor was a general who was apparently somewhat disrespectful towards him. You know, so he certainly learned a lot on the job, and he seems to. I mean, just going back to my original point, this man seems to be a man that's very comfortable being president.
I agree.
And I think, but you were saying earlier, you think he's going to be more assertive?
I mean, look, if today's any indication, I think so. And I think if you look what's happened over the past few weeks on gun control, on the debt limit issue, I mean, he was, I mean, you know, not getting enough coverage. But the debt limit issue, basically, he didn't blink. He called the Republicans bluff, and they blinked. And they basically surrender on the debt limit. You know, he's been much more assertive, much more aggressive than I think anyone would have expected. And I think it's leaves Republicans in a tough spot. Because, you know, think of the gun control issue as an example of this. I mean, he can push forward with this stuff and they may reject it. They're going to pay a big political price for doing so. And I think, you know, if you're Obama, you're now feeling, you know, that you can push forward with your agenda and be aggressive, knowing that there's a political payoff for doing so, even if you lose. I think that's a little bit what you're seeing now.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Michael Cohen.
Always a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Michael Cohen, who's a U.S. columnist for The Guardian and author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. He's a fellow of the Century Foundation and previously served in the United States Department of State as chief speechwriter for the U.S. representative to the United Nations. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the former U.S. ambassador to Mali.
Yeah, it seems like, yeah, it feels like.